What you're hearing right now is part of I Got Lost in His Arms from Annie Get Your Gun, written by composer Irving Berlin. You've probably heard and know many of Berlin's, get this, more than 1,000 songs. But do you know really what makes them great? Rob Capello does, and he's coming here to Boston to teach us. Musician, composer, author, Rob's coming back to town this weekend for another edition of his What Makes It Great concerts, brought to you by Celebrity Series of Boston. And this time, the show will take a deep dive into the songbook of Irving Berlin. We caught up with Rob yesterday, and I asked him, why Irving Berlin?
Amazingly enough, Irving Berlin is the most successful composer of the entire American songbook. And I can't imagine anyone who would have been less likely to become the most successful American songbook composer than Irving Berlin. I mean, what an amazing rags to riches story. And also, it seemed to have a particular resonance now. I mean, all the anti-Semitism that's happening right now, or that's in the news right now, literally without anti-Semitism, Irving Berlin would never have become the most successful American songbook composer in history, nor would he have ever even been in America if it weren't for anti-Semitism.
So I was going to have us dive right into his song, I Got Lost in His Arms. But I think what we should do, actually, since you've sort of taken us to this place in his history and you've talked about this rags to riches, and I know what you mean. You're not saying that there's a good side to anti-Semitism,
no.
But you're saying that he found grace in the changes he had to make in his life. So just very quickly, Rob, take us through that story.
Yeah. As I say, anti-Semitism is at the heart of the entire story. Born in 1888, Tsarist Russia, leaves home because his home was burned down as part of a wave of anti-Semitic pogroms, comes to America in 1893, arrives at Ellis Island a year after it opens, unbelievably poor, family of eight, lives in a squalid tenement conditions on the Lower East Side with eight family members. Father dies at the age of 13. He leaves home, runs away from home, lives in Bowery Street flop houses at the age of 13, barely earning enough money to survive, selling newspapers on the street, busking, eventually becomes a singing waiter in a Chinatown restaurant, then gets heard eventually by a music publisher, becomes a lyricist, can't play the piano at all, can't read music, teaches himself to play just enough piano to play his own songs, never learns to read or write music in his entire life, has to dictate all his songs to various musical secretaries that he hires throughout his career, can only play the piano in one key, F sharp major, using almost exclusively the black keys of the piano, and somehow with all those handicaps manages to become the most successful songwriter in American history.
And
an incredible story.
It is an incredible story, and all the way to music that you think represents greatness. And you pick I Got Lost in His Arms. We played it in the intro. Why this song? Tell us what makes it great.
You know, I often say there, and this is a real oversimplification, but I'll stand by it. I often say there are really two kinds of composers. There's the people who are what I call melody composers, who are really driven by melody. And then there are people who are what I call harmony composers, where what first happens is the chords. And the chords are what drive them. The melody gets put on top of them. But there are people who are driven by chords, and there are people who are driven by melodies. And all my life, since the age of three, it's beautiful chords that have been what moved me in music. And this has the most beautiful chords and the most incredible harmony of any Irving Berlin song that I know. So I guess that's why I picked it, because I'm a harmony guy, and this has the most beautiful harmony I've ever heard.
So introduce us to it.
Okay, so this is the second act ballad. This is from Annie Get Your Gun, written when he was already 58 years old. Okay, Annie Get Your Gun, people thought he was washed up. This was a kind of modern book musical that he wasn't even interested in. He liked to write these reviews. He wasn't interested in these modern book musicals. But at the age of 58, he wrote his greatest book musical. So this is Act Two, the wonderful ballad. Now, we've been introduced to her as this kind of wisecracking sharpshooter in the first act, but all of a sudden, this song gives us a completely different side to her character, an unbelievably vulnerable side. And it starts with the very first note. Here's the first eight bars of the introduction. So she sings, "Don't ask me just how it happened. I wish I knew. I can't believe that it happened. And still it's true." Now, the subtleties begin with the very opening chord, which already immediately shows Annie up in the air and confused. This is not a traditional firmly rooted chord. You have to listen closely. Not a firmly rooted chord, what musicians call a root position chord. That's not Annie, who was in Act One, who knew she was. But it's an up in the air, weightless, vulnerable chord. Hear the difference?
Yeah, I do.
Normal, up in the air.
Yeah, it leaves you feeling a little uncertain.
Exactly, from the very first chord. Now, the harmony is beautifully subtle here. He could easily have just written one chord for the entire first measure like this. Chord, don't ask me. But listen to how the extra dissonant chord on the word ask, don't ask me, makes the chord on just sound even sweeter. Just. That gorgeous chord. Just how it happened. One more time. Don't dissonant. Sweet. If you don't love that chord, you'll never love Irving Berlin, and don't come to our program. Just how it happened. But that chord lets us know how what happened felt. That's what it felt like. Now, I wish I knew could easily have been this. And listen to just one chord on new. I wish I knew. Now, that would have been fine. I wish I knew. But listen to the wonderful dissonance and the accompaniment on new as she tries to figure out what happened. Not this, I wish I knew, but this, I wish I knew.
So Rob, it's like,
yeah,
it's like she, like, I think a lot of people know what it feels like when you both fall in love, but it makes you feel flustered and unsettled. And you
exactly.
Just showed me all of that in like five notes.
And those four notes are her thing. I'm flustered. What is it? I'm trying to figure it out. Now, those four notes didn't need to be there. You know, great composers don't really set words to music. What they set is the emotion behind the words. And that's, it's the feeling of, I can't figure it out. Now, this is really subtle. The instruments could have just doubled the voice part like this with one line on, I can't believe that it happened. Get that in your ear, just one line of melody in the accompaniment. But he adds a second lower part, making this lovely duet. Not this, but this.
Mm. Yeah.
And now this is perfect. The verse could have ended thoughtfully down low like this. And still it's true. That would have been fine, ending down low. One more time. And still it's true, but instead she floats up exquisitely like this. And still it's true. I mean, that is just exquisite floating up there. I mean, that is such a completely different Annie than we've met. And you know, that's what's so great about this, is discovering different sides of the character that even she herself was unaware of. Now, the power of harmony. Now we get to the famous chorus. Now, if I were to play you just the melody of this chorus by itself, you would never guess how moving it is. In fact, it's so ridiculously simple that it's almost embarrassing. The entire melody is just a single note repeated 10 times, and then we move up a step. Now, this is not great. I got lost in his arms, and I had to stay. I
mean, almost
that
embarrassing.
That is embarrassing. I mean, and if that's not bad enough, he then does the same thing starting one note higher, the same note 10 times and then up like this. It was dark in his arms and I lost my way. And then you can't believe it, but he does it a third time, a step higher, the same note 10 times and then up a step. From the dark came a voice and it seemed to say. I mean, it doesn't get worse than this.
No, it kind of sounds like plink, 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 plink.
I mean, this is something that if you can't read music and you got one finger and you can't really play the piano well, you sit there and you go. I mean.
Yes. It sounds like an elementary school piano lesson.
Like elementary school. I mean, this is not great. But when you put the harmony underneath it, it becomes so incredibly exquisite and full of feeling. So you take this simple melody. But now when I put chords underneath, it becomes this. I got lost in his arms and I had to stay. I mean, everything about that is fantastic. A normal beginning for this would have been this. I got lost. But that doesn't show us what being lost feels like.
Yeah.
This is just words. I got lost. There's nothing wrong with it, but it tells us nothing more than the words themselves. But listen to the chords under it that shows us what being lost feels like. I got lost. That's what lost feels like. Lost in his arms. And I had to stay. And that rises up a little. And then listen to the second version. Again, the melody is just, it was dark in his arms. But the dissonance shows us what being dark in his arms feels like. It was dark, that chord.
Yeah, it's a dark chord.
It is so dark, dark in his arms. Now she lost her way, and I lost my way. That chord is what being lost feels like. The third version is the most exquisite of all. From the dark, ooh, that fantastic chord. Dark came a voice, and it seemed to say. And then after this incredibly simple, slowly rising scale, describing how she felt, the punchline quotes the voice in the dark, and it says, there you go. It's an incredible release, and it's got a brand new melody. There you go. Wow, there you go. Now, again, chords could have been normal and told us nothing more. There you go. I mean, that would have been fine if a student handed it in. No problem. There you go. But there's no sense of release. Listen to the beautiful extra inner line in the accompaniment. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Each one tells us where she's gone.
Yeah.
Here, here, here. And then the second one, she says the same word twice, but that's an opportunity to take us deeper inside what it means to her. The second time starts with this wistful chord. There you go. And then there's this, but there's also this. I mean, so fantastic.
Yeah. So, Rob, I feel like I'm on a journey where I understand what it means for her to fall in love.
Absolutely. And she's on the same journey. You know, the reason we listen to these great American songbook songs, really, is because they're ultimately about transformation. In a great theater song, the character is never the same person at the end of the song that they were at the beginning of the song. And for us, it's a model of transformation. It gives us hope that we too might someday be different people at the end of our songs than we were at the beginning of the songs. And that's what's so beautiful about the ending of this song, because we can cut to that. So like many Irving Berlin songs, repetition is the key to intelligibility, making sure people get it and can whistle on the way out of the theater. So it starts to repeat. How I felt as I fell, I just can't recall, but his arms held me fast and it broke the fall, all the same. But instead of continuing like the first time, and I said to my heart as it jumped around. That would copy the first time. The emotion pours forth in an extra tumble of notes on the words jumping all around. And I said to my heart as it, now we change, foolishly kept jumping all around.
And there it is, fluttering away.
Perfect. And the ending is perfect. We come back to the lost in his arms note. But she's discovered something else. He could have finished on that note. I got lost. But look what I've found, but there would be no transformation.
No, right.
She'd still be stuck on the same note. She would have discovered nothing. Instead, she magically rises, transformed to show us what she's found. I got lost, but look what I've dissonant and found.
And now I can float away with happiness.
That's it. I mean, transformation in a 32-measure song. I mean, that's what this music is all about.
Yeah. So before we let you go, I do want to have you do one other thing. Back in 2019, it's Irving Berlin. He wrote White Christmas. And back in 2019, you completely changed the way I understood that song. And at the beginning of this conversation, when you were talking about anti-Semitism, you made reference to the fact that it was his experience as a Jewish composer that took us to the greatness of White Christmas. So maybe give us like 3 minutes just for everybody to enjoy what we know you can do in teaching us the greatness of that song.
So, White Christmas. Here's the famous opening that everyone knows. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Just like the ones I used to know. Now, every single measure is special and has some incredible musical detail that helps bring this truly imaginary scene to life. You know, one of the things that I hope people get from all of these What Makes a Great programs is that the difference between good and great is both enormous and infinitesimal.
Yeah.
It's hundreds of small, inspired choices made by a composer, note by note, rhythm by rhythm, and measure by measure. So here's an ordinary version I wrote that gets rid of all the great details of the first four measures. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Now, that's actually closer to him than you actually think. But every single measure has something special. First of all, instead of this first neutral chord, which tells us nothing about what our feeling about Christmas is, he adds just one note, not this, but this.
And there's a warmth to that.
There's a warmth. Before we start, and again, it's just I'm is the word. Again, composers don't set words. They set the feeling behind the words. So this is ordinary. This is Berlin. I. Now, instead of this, we get this fantastic note.
Yeah.
It's like rubbing a hand on a foggy window.
Ooh.
And then not this, but add one note for warmth. Again, it's just one note. Ordinary Berlin. And then again, not this for Christmas, but another rubbing the hand on the foggy window. Ordinary Berlin.
Yeah, I mean, I can feel the warmth of the fire. I can smell the pine tree. I feel longing for family. And you played like three notes.
Exactly. And it just continues. Every single thing. Again, here's the next phrase. Ordinary. Just like the ones I know. Boring, you get nothing. Just like the ones I know. But instead he reaches just one note higher, like this. Just like the ones. All the yearning in that one note. Ones I used to know. Now, how do you make the treetops glisten? Well, here's how you don't do it. Where the treetops glisten. Again, there's nothing there. But listen to the descending line in Berlin's piano part and the aching chord on glisten. Where the tree tops glisten. I mean, harmony is the best invention man has ever come up with. Glisten, and then the voice copies treetops glisten, lower for children listen. And ordinary harmony in the piano again would have been no emotion whatsoever. And children listen, who cares? But he adds this beautiful descending line in the piano and a remarkable dissonant chord on listen, filled with unexpected pain. You know, Berlin actually had his second child die on Christmas Day. And Christmas Day was always a poignant day for him. He would visit the cemetery on Christmas Day every year of his second child. So we feel that in under and children on the chord on listen. Listen. So much poignancy there. And listen to how the piano part depicts the sound of the sleigh bells in the snow at the end of the next phrase. To hear sleigh bells in the snow. And here they go.
Here they go.
Bells, 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 ding, 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 ding. I mean, it's just fantastic.
So that's just the beginning of what also makes White Christmas great. And we are going to post that. If people want to hear the whole conversation with you from 2019, which made me fall in love with Irving Berlin in a new way, but kind of with you in a new way too, Rob. We will link to that on our website at radioboston.org. So, Rob, ultimately, Irving Berlin, harmony. At the beginning, you said what you've always loved is harmony. And this is a man, if I understand from you, whose trials in life, his struggles to be who he wanted to be, and to learn what he didn't even know how to do, created a kind of depth of harmony in him that is what makes his music so great.
Yeah, I think it's also his depth of experience as a human being. You know, he constantly talked about wanting to reach the average man, that his vernacular of the middle class was the language that he was looking for. He didn't want hoity-toityness. He wanted to get the heart of America. But I think what he really wanted to talk about was getting at what was universal. It wasn't even so much middle America versus elite America. It was what was universal. I think that's what allowed him as an immigrant Jew to actually write something like A White Christmas, because he was looking beyond the religious significance of the holiday, which I suppose is easier to do as an outsider, but looking for what was fundamentally American about it. I think his experience as an outsider made him look for what was universal, what was the universal human experience, and his own trials and tribulations, I think, deepened his sense of what was possible to write about.
Musician, composer, and author Rob Capello. He'll be in Boston this weekend for part one of the celebrity series of Boston, What Makes It Great, Inventing America series. And you can find a link for more information, including how to get tickets and how to watch the show virtually on our website, radioboston.org.